That's where we want to be. If I'm a school teacher and I got a group of kids in the classroom, I want to be in executive state so I can serve my students best. If I'm a first responder, I want to be in executive state because otherwise I have tunnel vision, tunnel hearing, tunnel thinking, and I miss stuff. I'm in more danger. I don't serve my community. I'm potentially putting myself or my partners, my crew at risk. So we got to be in executive state when we're working as a first responder as much as possible.
San Diego 911 emergency.
You need to come right away. There's a man with a gun and it's loaded.
What's the police?
Receiving emergency signal from
4 George 1141. We've got a white team out there. We need paramedics closely.
All available units will code that way.
Welcome to the De-Escalation Conversations podcast. With me today is a really, really cool guy who I've gotten to know over Zoom. I've never actually met him in person, and I hope to do that pretty soon and shake his hand, give him a big old hug just because he's a great guy, Brandon Merget. And he has over a decade of experience in the field of meditation training. You know, a lot of times we talk about all sorts of different types of training. Well, today we're going to be talking about meditation. Brandon is the founder and managing director of Modern Mindfulness, which is a company that helps humans take a real world approach to meditation. He is also a lead meditation trainer and a certified mindfulness coach who has trained organizations and individuals in mindfulness, mental effectiveness, and compassion. And that's sorely missing in today's world. That's the C word, compassion. Brandon is passionate about developing the long-term habit of mindfulness, creating mindful communities around the world, working with law enforcement, and helping fellow mindfulness teachers increase their impact by better sharing their message with the world. He has a global reach along with a local touch, as he is fluent in Chinese, certified by renowned experts, and a lover of, you're going to help me half, I can't talk this morning, Brandon, you're going to have to help me out with the pronunciation of this, Renzai Zen?
Close, Renzai.
Renzai Zen, and Jiu-Jitsu?
Yes.
Awesome. He leads an international team in Austin, Texas that covers the U.S., Europe, and China. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. You did very well.
I appreciate that. You put me right back into executive state just by that compliment. I appreciate that. So I was blessed to be introduced to you by a friend of mine whose name is Goggin. And I've spent a lot of time with Goggin talking to him, and he just raved about you and said, hey, you guys got to meet. And he did an introduction. And I love how the world, the universe, God, spirit, whatever your higher power is, brings people together. And as soon as I started chatting with you, I immediately knew you had to be on the podcast because I want other people to know about you in the schools and first responder community that we serve here at IDEA. So, Brandon, tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get into this whole meditation thing? Because, you know, it's starting, I will say this, school teachers probably been way ahead of first responders on this. But in the first responder community, military, police, fire, medical services, we are starting to see more and more and more mindfulness stuff come in, which is having a really profound impact. And everybody in the communities that we serve, school teachers and first responders, they need this mindfulness approach. They need some answers to deal with the overwhelming amount of stress that they're facing. So tell us a little bit about your journey, what brought you into the space, and then what you do with it.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for the great introduction. When I was about 19 years old, I started my self-improvement journey. And I got to say, it was like drinking water through a fire hose. in terms of the world of self-improvement, where the hell do you begin? There's so much out there. And then when you throw spirituality and religion into the mix, it could be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I grew up very traditionally in South Louisiana. And when I started that self-help journey, I was just totally overwhelmed. And I thought, what is the simplest thing I could do to start to attempt to be a better human being? And the idea of just watching my mind gravitated towards me very deeply, and just practicing basic mindfulness meditation, which is watching the breath or watching the mind. And about 23, I knew that I wanted to face my fear of abandonment, actually. My father's from Cuba. He came to New York at 12 alone, and he had to fight basically to defend himself because he got picked on, didn't speak English. And then he learned judo, got a black belt in judo, which got me into jiu-jitsu, and he grew a business. And I wanted to go to the other side of the world to face that fear of abandonment and also go towards my love of Eastern philosophy. And very early on in that journey, about 9 months then, I wound up in the Himalayan mountains, studying more meditation, studying more yoga. And from there, I spent about 5 years in that region of the world. It was north of Laos and close to Myanmar in Burma. The province is called Yunnan Province in China. That's the beginning of the region of the Himalayan mountains. Same thing. I lived there for a long time learning Chinese with a lot of interesting people. And I thought, where's the fear? Where is the one thing that I'm afraid of doing? So I'm from South Louisiana. At the time, it was population 6,000. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Shanghai. That scares the crap out of me. Let me go check that out. So I moved there. First month really sucked. It was extremely hot. Very hard to find a place to live in Shanghai. 25 million people. You don't know one person. It was super intense. And about a month in, I started to go to networking events. And at that time in my life, I was writing about just general self-improvement. I was writing about what I loved, and I supported myself via just like Google Ads on the blog, a very simple blog. When I got to Shanghai, I started to go to professional events to network. 9 out of 10 times, people asked me, oh, you write about meditation. I said, yes. Do you practice meditation? I said, yes. What are the benefits? I said, well, it helps me become calm, helps me have less stress, more self-awareness. And then after the third or fourth person that I met in a very high pressure city, he asked me the question, could you teach me?
Mm.
I said, absolutely. Very happy to. So I started teaching. I ended up teaching for free about 1,000 people in 1 year in Shanghai and growing communities there. And I asked myself a question, who's done this that I could model? Who's a mentor or somebody who teaches me? Hard to find a new problem in life somebody hasn't already faced and succeeded with. So I ended up getting a job at an organization called Potential Project, the corporate mindfulness training organization. And basically, they taught me the most professional way, in my view, to portray meditation. So I started working with a lot of executives, Fortune 500, Lego, Disney, Sonos, Chevron, work with the New Orleans FBI in New Orleans. And they taught me a different way of portraying meditation in more of an executive, high-pressured environment. Worked for them for about 4 years, came back to America 3.5 years ago. And I thought, my God, there's so many mindfulness teachers here now. So popular, more so than it was a decade ago. It's great. There's a peace army here. And I started training those mindfulness teachers in entrepreneurship and leadership. And that was my full-time job for about 3 years straight. And then I pivoted more towards teaching the general public. And also I work with a lot of coaches, a lot of executives. And I absolutely love working with mindfulness teachers, meditation teachers. and the general public. But by and large, our goal is sharing meditation with 10% of the U.S. And that's the vision. And sometimes the strategy of the vision will always change, but the vision stands true. So that's really what I'm about. And I'm not naive to think, okay, the whole population is going to be meditating. Hey, go for a walk. And just when you're walking, just walk or write and just write. Read and just read, or you know, smoke a cigar if that's what you're into. And but when you're doing it, don't scroll on your phone. Just be in the moment. Meditation is great. Do that. But really empowering people to practice more metacognition, more awareness of mind. And that's really what we would like to see society look like in the future. This is what separates us from all the other animals in the animal kingdom. I know there's a lot, but I want to kind of give you a lot to pick from.
So. Yeah, no, that's what an amazing journey. So a couple of quick things. How far from Nepal were you?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say it was probably about a 6-hour drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask is this. You mentioned the Himalayas. I have set an intention. So back in 2018, I went to a 10-day silent retreat. First one I ever did. And people ask me, they're like, yeah, so did you do like a 1-day or a 3-day or 4-day silent retreat before you did 10? I'm like, no, I freaking just jumped right into a 10-day. And it was in England, just a couple hours outside London. Beautiful location. Well, I found out that they have one in Nepal. And I have no idea, but I'm like, I'm going. I don't know if it's going to be in 2024 or it might take until 2025. I'm waiting for the announcement to come out for openings. But so when you talked about that, I'm like, hey, that's where I want to go. So
give me the info. I'll go with you.
All right. That would be so much fun. We couldn't talk to each other, but you know, we can talk while we travel there and back.
10% of communication is the words coming out of your mouth.
There you go. Good point. Good point.
Yeah. I'm always born in Asia, so I'll be in China this month. So
yeah, you had mentioned that you're gonna be traveling back there. How long do you think you'll be back in China for?
About a month.
Okay. That's awesome. So did you learn to speak Chinese when you went there the first time, or did you know before you went, or how did that work out?
I got all kinds of goofy stories. I'll share one. I think people would appreciate it. First of all, I'm not a big fan of Rosetta Stone. That's what I pay like $200 for Rosetta Stone. The first sentence was, I like to go swimming. I'm like, this isn't helping me. I just moved to China. Like, well, Xuan, Yoyang. That's not helpful.
When am I ever going to use that phrase? That's funny.
Yeah. So basically, I moved to China not knowing Chinese. I could say, hello, I don't want it in fried rice. Suffice to say, the first week, I ate a lot of fried rice. Basically, I wanted to know how do you say? Like, that was the one thing I wanted to know how to say. And my cell phone didn't work at the time. I couldn't just, like, open up my smartphone and search this stuff. Because, like, the internet wouldn't work. You know, that was 13 years ago. It wasn't as easy. So I had this one big Canadian friend, super nice guy. I said, you just got to teach me, how do you say? So I can say, it's a cup, it's headphones. And he didn't teach me how do you say. He said, this is how do you say. He said, Shima Isa. And that is, what does it mean? But I thought it was, how do you say? So he's like, let's go practice your Chinese. He took me to the market and he would smoke a cigarette and just kind of watch me. And in China, everybody, most people at that time were smoking cigarettes. And he points and go talk to that lady. You have to really say it with a lot of enthusiasm and go pick up that banana and ask her, how do you say banana? So I go pick up this banana to this lady and I go, what does it mean? And he was like, say it louder, if you can't hear you. What does a banana mean?
Yeah, because if somebody doesn't understand you, that means you got to shout at them, right?
Right. Oh, that went on for a whole month.
And, oh, my God. I got a lot of free bananas.
Yeah, I got a lot of free bananas, got a lot of free candy. I was the village special person.
They're just trying to get you to go away, aren't they, at that point?
Pretty much. But yeah, that's how I learned Chinese. And it's a great language. You know, I'm always a forever student of learning that language. It's almost 1.4 billion people speak it. So.
That's so cool. So when I learned to meditate, which I kind of dove into it right before I went on the silent retreat. I figured if I'm going to be doing this for 10 days, I ought to kind of know what I'm getting into. And then, of course, they teach you during the retreat. When you and I talked before, one of the things, I learned this one method of meditation. And it wouldn't work for a first responder on duty. Well, maybe a firefighter, but certainly not a police officer on duty. And certainly not military working. Because the method of meditation I learned was to close your eyes and concentrate on the breath going in and out of the tip of your nose. Mm-hmm. And just focus only on that. And any other thoughts that come in, just acknowledge them. And, you know, yes, I'm having that thought, and release it. Or depending if how I'm sitting, my knee's starting to cramp, or my butt's starting to get a cramp in it. Acknowledge, okay, my butt's getting a cramp in it, and let it go. That was the method I learned. Well, that doesn't work if you're in the middle of a 10-hour, 12-hour shift as a police officer, as an example, and you need to like bring it down a notch because you've been to call to call to call to call to call, and you're stressed out and you're like, if I have to deal with one more freaking idiot, I'm going to lose my mind, which is not going to go well because today it's going to be on body cam or somebody's there with a video, you know, so their phone or something. You taught me that there's a way to meditate with your eyes open. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard that before. As to me, that was wild. So can you kind of dive into that just a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. The Zen vision. We don't live our lives with our eyes closed. And when one sits in meditation, it's like we're starting a fire. We have some warmth. And then we leave the meditation behind. After it's done, we go live our life. Meditation is this training for life. It's warrior training. And I want to go back to Rinzai Zen just for a moment, because there's two types of Zen. There's Soto Zen and Rinzai Zen. And this is very interesting for your listeners, because Soto Zen was for the lay people. It was for regular monastics and lay people. And a long time ago, legend has it that the samurai were very interested that the monastics were not afraid of death. Mm. And the samurai, as the story goes, asked the monastic to teach them meditation. I reckon that they said, "You're going to teach us meditation." And that birthed Rinzai Zen. So it's samurai Zen, it's warrior Zen. It's very different. It's a little bit more theatrical, a little bit more intense. In both schools of Zen, they practice meditation with the eyes open. But in Rinzai Zen, we're a bunch of troublemakers, pretty much. It's impatient Zen. Both take about the same amount of time. I'll go back to your question. Is we live our lives with our eyes open and to be mindfully aware of what's happening in the present moment with zero reactivity. Aware of everything and reacting to no thing is really the goal of meditation and developing this 360-degree vision. So developing situational awareness behind you, above you, beside you, in front of you, and having your awareness go up behind you, having your awareness go up beside you in zero reactivity, being extremely, extremely aware of the environment and what's happening, but not reacting to it. Now, this would be a freaking amazing skill for law enforcement, first responders, and even just a regular security guard. I saw the security guard at a store just walking around, bored out of his mind. I'm like, oh, what a perfect moment to practice meditation walking. And there are a lot of different ways to ease into meditative awareness. And you're not at all cutting off what's happening. You are saying yes to what's happening. You're being more aware of everything than you ever have been before. The difference is that there's zero reactivity or very, very little reactivity. One of the ways of doing that, which are many, is being aware of the feet on the ground.
Okay. So I'm going to pause you there just for a second. So, Brenda, you just said some really, really cool stuff. And I just want to, the reason I wanted to pause you for a moment is I wanted to take a step back and because you just completely blew my mind. You were talking about the samurai warriors and how they were realizing this other group of people, they weren't afraid of death.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a special significance there. Not just that they're not afraid of death, but a calmness, a relaxation, a lack of fear that comes along with that. And the reason I wanted to really emphasize this for our listeners is anybody who's been listening to the podcast has heard me talk repeatedly. And it's one of our core foundational principle. Your mind can only be in one of two states. It can be in executive state or it can be in survival state. Survival state, fight, flight, or freeze. And a few of the other Fs, we just keep it simple, fight, flight, or freeze. It's a negative emotional state. Fear causes you to go into survival state. Executive state, where we're at right now, we're relaxed, our prefrontal cortex is online, we're able to connect with each other, have rapport, have empathy for other people, be creative, do problem solving, all of those great things that really make life fun and enjoyable to live. That's the absence of fear. So when you said, yeah, the samurais, which clearly top-notch dudes, you know, they're the special forces of the day. They were looking at others to learn something from them because they weren't afraid of death, the absence of fear, which means they were more in executive state. And like I say, you just blew my mind because that's where we want to be. If I'm a school teacher and I got a group of kids in the classroom, I want to be in executive state so I can serve my students best. If I'm a first responder, I want to be in executive state because otherwise I have tunnel vision, tunnel hearing, tunnel thinking, and I miss stuff. I'm in more danger. I don't serve my community. I'm potentially putting myself or my partners, my crew at risk. So we got to be in executive state when we're working as a first responder as much as possible. And so I want to take a step back to this, we're not afraid of death thing and how the meditation keeps us in this executive state because it frees up our mind from distracting thoughts. Can you kind of wrap that all in? I hope I didn't overload you there.
You could try to overload me, but you may not.
But you're mindful, so probably not. Okay,
job to not be overloaded.
Thank you.
So I'll say something that one of my Zen teachers taught me a while ago, and the most powerful person in the room is the one who is most aware. I'll say that again.
Yeah.
The most powerful person in the room is the one who is most aware of all things and reacting to